Hour 2 of that 590 show coming at you right now on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com. Matt Berger and Matt Rocchio behind the microphones. John Giamatti Rudolph behind the dials. The text line is 855-282-8255. The Bellman Automotive phone line is 855-282-8255, but it is ocupado right now as we are getting ready to talk to Kevin Brackett from RealSpoilers.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett. Kevin, how are you, sir?
Hey, Matt, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Can't complain at all, my friend. I do, though, have to hold you accountable because last week when we had you on, you said that the King Arthur movie was going to make $20 million and you were $5 million off and only made $15 million.
Oh, my gosh, with my glowing review, who would have thought?
I think it was the glowing review that you gave that film on these very airwaves, and that cost it another $5 million.
Do you think I'm responsible for that $5
million? I'm blaming you. If Guy Ritchie comes looking for you, it's your fault, Kevin Brackett.
All right, I'm going to point the finger at you. I'm going to say, hey, it's his show.
I didn't tell you to give it a bad review.
Do you think that movie made less than all of Charlie Hunnam's paychecks from Sons of Anarchy combined?
Oh, my God.
Did it really?
Sure. I'm saying, do you think it did?
Oh, well, I don't know. He probably didn't get paid that much for Sons of Anarchy. Because, I mean, that was on basic cable, so who knows. But I know that the movie that you saw, I believe you saw it this morning, Ridley Scott goes back to the franchise that he started in Alien Covenant. It is starring Michael Fassbender and Danny McBride. How was this film?
You know, I would call it a nice palate cleanser from that movie last week. It was refreshing. It was nice to go to a franchise that, you know, is beloved by many. I'm a fan of Alien and Aliens. How about you guys?
I haven't seen either one of those movies in a long time because I'm not a big sci-fi fan and I'm not a big horror fan.
Gotcha. I mean, you know, they really were kind of revolutionary back in the 80s.
Absolutely, they were. You know, There's no question about that. And they were very popular films, too.
Absolutely. I mean, the designs, the Geiger designs of the alien and the shuttles and all the eggs and everything that really made that movie look so spectacular. You had a strong female protagonist in Sigourney Weaver, which was different from what you saw, you know. So you had that time period where it was like Linda Hamilton and Sigourney Weaver. So it was part of that movement. And also just excellent sci-fi films. And so it was nice to return to the franchise and get more of what you would call an alien sequel. Now, you know, of course, a few years back there was Prometheus, which was kind of a secret alien prequel. It wasn't released in the marketing. People had ideas that it might be, but no one was sure until they went and saw it. So come to find out, Prometheus is the prequel, so it's the story of how these aliens came to be, except you kind of just got a teaser. They really didn't give you much. And so this is now the beginning of, come to find out, three films that will lead us up to Alien, the original film. So, you know, one thing I was counting on was a few more answers, but of course they're dragging it out into three movies, so you can't expect to get too much, right?
No, not at all. So I guess this is, they're kind of pulling like a George Lucas, and you know, you had your original movie that came out in the 70s, so this is going to be the prequel to the movie that came out, you know, almost 40 years ago.
Absolutely. I think it is the same concept. It's very similar. And, the storytelling going back to the beginning and, you know, seeing how all this got started. So definitely following his lead. But, you know, the thing that I think they did with this film is I think they made a better movie than The Phantom Menace. You know, that one, of course, is the least favorite of many. And although there were a couple cool scenes, you got the pod races, you got the lightsaber fight. But other than that,
and you had Darth Maul. How cool was Darth Maul?
Absolutely. That was the best part. Whenever I go back to like test a surround sound system or test the quality of a TV, go straight to the lightsaber fight. That's a sure bet right there. But this one here, you know, what it does is it basically tries to bridge the gap. So like I said, it's the first of three movies bridging the gap between Prometheus and Alien. And so we start out with David. So if you remember in Prometheus, David is an android that was sent to be in charge and oversee this mission from Prometheus. And so he was one of two survivors at the end of that movie. Spoiler alert, I guess you've had a few years to see it, so I won't feel too bad about that one. But it starts with David and a very young Guy Pearce who plays Wayland, who's the owner of the Wayland Corporation. Of course, when we get to the original Alien film from the 80s, the ship, the Nostromo, was part of the Weyland-Yutani Corporation. So Wayland is the one that started this company. So we see him young, and we see him creating David, played by Michael Fassbender, and they have some interactions. They talk about Wayland sees David as a son, even though he was created, and David sees Wayland. Wayland sees David as a son. David sees Wayland as a father. And so we see that dynamic in how they treat one another. But something's off with David. David has more of a creative mind. He thinks for himself more. So it's foreshadowing into what we'll get in later in the movie, and I won't reveal too much of it. But here we see that David isn't just a robot following orders. There's more to him. So fast forward, and we go to a ship that is called the Covenant. So that's hence the film title, Alien Covenant. And they are a colony. They're on a colony mission with 2,000 colonists, and they're trying to find a new planet. At this point, Earth is inhabitable, and so this crew is out, and they're trying to find a place to settle and build, you know, and let humanity live on. And of course, from the previews, from what we know of alien films, that doesn't usually work out too well for them, unfortunately.
Yeah, quit bringing things on board the spaceship, because it never ends well in any movie.
Yeah, you know what? The funny thing is that you may have heard that James Franco is in this movie. Come to find out, you learn very early that he has a cameo role, so it doesn't end very well for him, and I won't spoil how, but James Franco's on the ship, Danny McBride is on the ship, we have several new actors. None of these actors have been in an alien movie before, none of them were in Prometheus, aside from David, so this is a new crew. They end up getting a distress signal, so they get a scrambled distress signal, and of course, as they do in any space movie, the good captain says, "We have to go help them. It's our duty." So they land on a planet, and you know what happens? They find some alien embryos, and it gets crazy from there. And I mean, I don't want to give away too much of the plot, but basically, we learn about the alien, the creature called a xenomorph. That's what the technical name is for the creature in the original Alien film. And so this kind of shows us how the xenomorph came into existence. And so it has something to do with this planet and the toxins. And that's all I'm going to say. But, if you like the franchise, I think that you'll find it very interesting. I think learning more of the backstory, learning how these xenomorphs came to be created, learning what part David has in all of that, because we don't see David for a while, but eventually Michael Fassbender's character David does come back, and we find out what he's been doing since the end of Prometheus. And so it's interesting. And we see something we've never seen before, which is how these xenomorphs came into existence, because for all we've known, they've just existed since the first Alien movie. So for that, I will give them credit.
How is Danny McBride in this movie? Because he's mostly known for being a comedic actor. He was great in Eastbound and Down. I even like Your Highness. That movie comes on, I'll watch it and I laugh. Vice Principals, I'm not as big a fan of, because I just think he's doing a watered-down version of Kenny Powers, but he was great as the pyrotech guy in Tropic Thunder. How is Danny McBride in this role?
Sure, and I'm right with you there. It's funny, we do an episode on Real Spoilers called Deep Fried Tacos. Dan on the show coined that term, and deep fried tacos are movies that you enjoy, but you know they're not good for you, just like a deep fried taco from Jack in the Box.
That's a good way to put it.
That's great. Yeah, that's fantastic.
So we do one of those every few months, and my pick last deep fried tacos was Your Highness. I love it. I crack up every single time.
I do too. Like the special effects are terrible. I mean, like the acting is not the greatest, but every time that movie's on, I laugh my butt off. And that scene when he fights the centaur. Or the Minotaur, rather, and he cuts off his schmeckle. And next thing you see him, he's got it as a necklace around his neck. It's just him and this gigantic schmeckle hanging from a necklace. And Giamatti's laughing right now, just me explaining it. That's kind of what the movie is. It's so ridiculous, but you laugh at it.
Absolutely. And I think it's funny because in that movie, I know we're going off course here, but in that movie, they put so much effort into the scenery, into the costumes. Danny McBride, James Franco, they're putting on these accents and they're trying to be like medieval soldiers and knights. And it's ridiculous, right? So that's what makes it so fun, is the effort they put into it. So, he's really good in this one. Danny McBride, surprisingly, he does not play a goofball. Of course he cracks wise a few times, but honestly, he's more of a, I don't want to say an action hero, but he plays the straight character. He's a pilot and, his mission is to try to keep his people alive and to land on the planet and not land too close to the danger and let everybody escape. I'm not going to say if they do or not, but that's his mission anyway. So he really does play kind of a leadership role and a serious role. So it was refreshing to see him in that. I will say one thing about the movie that I did not care for, and this is a complaint I've had with many movies lately, and I think we've talked about it before, is the CG. You know, you think about the old sci-fi movies, you think about Alien specifically, Terminator, not so much 2 because of all the special effects, but the old sci-fi movies of the 80s had so many great special effects that were practical effects. And, you know, you lose something when you go to CG because the weight just isn't there. It's getting better and better all the time, but you lose that weight and that physicality, and your eyes pick up on it. And even though they're close, you get what's called the uncanny valley, especially with people, where the eyes just don't look quite right, the shadows aren't quite right. So in this movie, you don't get a lot of people that are CG, but the aliens, unfortunately, most of them are CG and not practical. And I was disappointed because the original film had so many great practical aliens. You know, those were huge caricatures that were built and designed by Geiger and were so impressive. So, you know, I think you lose something with that. And I wish that Hollywood would stay away from that and take notes from a director like George Miller. Remember Mad Max Fury Road from a few years ago was almost all practical stunts.
Yeah, and I'm not a big action movie guy, but Mad Max Fury Road is my favorite action movie because that thing is like an adrenaline shot right to the heart. I mean, I couldn't imagine having to chug like 2 Red Bulls and then go watch that movie. You'd probably die of a coronary.
Oh, my gosh.
Ridley Scott directed this film, and he's been real hit and miss, I would say, the past few years. He's had some good movies like The Martian. He's had some other ones that haven't exactly done too well at the box office, like Concussion. I think it was well reviewed, but didn't do well at the bank. How big is this movie for Ridley Scott?
I think this is really, really big for Ridley Scott, and the reason would be he's returning back to a beloved franchise, something that he created, and the film is entertaining. It's enjoyable. Again, my complaints with the CG, I think that the average theater goer isn't going to complain as much. I believe that we've gotten used to it over time, so you're going to have some diehards probably complaining a little bit here and there, but it doesn't ruin the movie. It's a fascinating film. It's a fascinating look at the franchise and the early beginnings of what we come to see later on. And I think that the only complaint that fans of the series really could have is the fact that they're stretching it out to 3 movies. Now, you can, of course, look at that one of 2 ways. One, you get the cliffhanger and you're not really sure what's going to happen next, although there is some closure. But, of course, it's still pretty open-ended. But two, you get 2 more movies out of it. And so if it's something you love and you want more Alien, you're going to get 2 more. So, you know, you just have to look at it optimistically and stay in it for the long ride.
Little change of pace here as we get you out of here, Kevin. I know you said you're not a big guy on trailers because you say it ruins stuff, but for me, one of my most anticipated movies now for over, about a year now has been the next Nolan epic, Dunkirk, and the first trailers dropped last week and into this week. Just what are you hearing about this movie? Thoughts early as people are seeing the trailers? Because I know there's a lot of expectations with Nolan, again, coming to the screen with a big story that it kind of has a very different angle than any other World War II movie we've ever seen.
Yeah, that's a good point. So the thing with that, I did have to see that trailer before a couple movies, but what I like is that the initial trailer that I saw did not give a lot away. There were guys on a boat, and they were sailing on the ocean and all packed together, and they were building the tension, building the stress. It gave you a good look at the tone of the film. So that one I didn't mind too much seeing. Now, what I've heard about the film and what most people are griping about is that it's PG-13, and so people want a gritty war movie. When we talk about these movies like Saving Private Ryan and, you know, I'd talk Clips Now or any of these big famous war movies, they want that really gritty, dirty violence, guns a-blazing kind of a thing. And so people are a little worried that it's going to be, kind of censored or held back because of that PG-13 rating, although, you know, PG-13 isn't what it used to be. I think they can stretch it a little bit, but that's the main concern. Other than that, there's a lot of buzz around it. It's one of the highest anticipated movies for the summer, so I'm really looking forward to it.
I think it's interesting that that's the main criticism because, I mean, it's essentially about a war. It's a war movie that doesn't actually take place around any major battles, and so I think it's interesting because it that seems like something that you could have expected going into this, and yet it's still the big complaint.
Yeah, you know, I think that what's going to be really nice and refreshing is that it's not going to be telling the same story over and over that we've already heard. So I think he's getting credit for telling a story that isn't as known as some of the larger battles. And I think also just attaching his name to it, you really, if you think about it, there's not a lot of movies that you can say that Christopher Nolan's made that have been stinkers. I mean, he
had
an illustrious career, very critical and fan, and received well by the fans. So I think, you know, just putting his name on it and the look of the film looks good, and a lot of people like a good war movie. So I think everyone's betting for him to get a win.
Any early complaints about the running time? I know it's going to be 2.5 to 3 hours. Any complaints you've heard about that yet?
No, I haven't, honestly. There hasn't been really been many complaints at all. Again, I think it's because of the name. Now, you put that same kind of a movie in the hands of someone like Michael Bay.
Oh, God, no.
You're getting a three-hour Transformers movie.
I think that would be like an interrogation tactic down in Guantanamo Bay. You either tell us where the bomb is, or we're going to make you watch this three-hour Michael Bay film.
Absolutely. So no, I think we're in good hands with Nolan and with Dunkirk. So we'll have to see, but I'm looking forward to it.
Kevin, what can we look forward to next week? It looks like it's Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, and Baywatch.
Yeah, you know, I think I would much rather go see Baywatch. It looks pretty funny.
It looks fun. It does. Like, I want to hate it, but number one, I like the fact that it's rated R. So there's a good chance it might be good. And number two, it's hard to like hate anything that The Rock's in. I'm not saying The Rock is great at everything, but The Rock, usually if The Rock's in something, you're going to give it a chance.
No, you can pretty much say The Rock is great in everything. You can go ahead and say that. I mean,
okay, The Rock is great in everything.
He really is. Unless you're going to count something like The Scorpion King 3 or whatever he was in.
Oh, yeah, like his first, like when he first started getting into feature films? Yeah.
Yeah, that might have been his first movie with bad CG. But other than that, if you think about the movies that he's been in, really, you know, even if the movie isn't that great, he elevates it. His characters, his roles, it's his charisma. He can just shine through anything. And he is honestly the number one reason that Fast and the Furious is such a huge franchise. He brought that franchise back from the dead in the fifth one, and he's going to own it here in the next couple movies. I think Vin's going to be out. He'll be the main star of it. He's great. So I think Baywatch will be hilarious. And Pirates, I'm just hoping is good because the fourth one was terrible. So I'm really, really hoping that Disney corrects itself here.
True confession time, I have not seen any of the Pirates movies.
Well, the first one's really good, so I would watch the first one sometime. It's really good.
Okay.
Second one's okay. Third one's, you know, it's okay. Fourth one is just absolutely terrible. So maybe watch one and two sometime and give it a shot.
Kevin, we appreciate your insight as always, sir. Enjoy the play tonight, and we will talk to you next Friday.
Sounds great, guys. Thanks a lot.
That is Kevin Brackett from RealSpoilers.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett. Let's head back to that 590 Show Sports Update Desk and Matt Rocchio.
They are underway in Ottawa, the Penguins and the Senators. 12 minutes left in the first period of that game. Again, a change in between the pipes for the Penguins going into this game. Matt Murray in for Marc-Andre Fleury. In about 10 minutes or so, we'll have tip-off from the Garden as the Celtics will try to rebound from an absolute drubbing in Game 1 against the Cleveland Cavaliers. It's Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Again, Cleveland leading that series 1-0. We have a final in Chicago. The Milwaukee Brewers down the Chicago Cubs 6-3 after a little bit of a rain delay there. About an hour of a time, eventually they close that win out. Anyhow, I'm Matt Rocchio with your 590 Sports Report.
Thank you very much, Matt Rocchio. Let's take a commercial break. You're listening to That 590 Show right here on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com.